Hey, everybody. Happy Sunday. No advertisers on this episode, brought to you by all of you that support us at charliekirk.com/support. Thank you for getting behind us and allowing us to hire more staff and doing what we do best. I want to thank Lorraine from Alsip, Illinois. Thank you. Chris from North Fort Myers, Florida. Thank you. Rebecca from California. Thank you. William from Alabama. Thank you. Tammy from Flowery Branch, Georgia. Thank you. Michael from Idaho. Thank you. Tara from California. Thank you. Christine from Utah. Thank you. Arthur from California. Thank you. Alan from Mississippi. And Karen from Ohio. CharlieKirk.com/support if you want to become a partner, a monthly partner even, to get behind the work we are doing. If you've had a great year and you have some extra money that you want to support to good initiatives, please consider supporting our show directly at charliekirk.com/support. Two podcasts a day, one on Saturday, one on Sunday, 330 speeches a year. We give 300 days on the road. And when you support us, you make it all possible at charliekirk.com/support. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Our gratitude is immense. If you want to come to Phoenix, Arizona, brought to you by Turning Point USA for America Fest for Donald Trump Jr., Kayleigh McEnany, Candace Owens, and more. It's tpusa.com/AMFEST. That's tpusa.com/AMFEST. America Fest, where we have the biggest speakers in the entire movement. Make a family affair of it, everybody. Get them in the car. Maybe you're in LA. Maybe you're in Vegas. Make a road trip out of it. Come to Phoenix, Arizona. You will not regret it. What we are doing from an experience standpoint for an attendee will blow your mind. tpusa.com/AMFEST, tpusa.com/AMFEST. Check it out today and get there if you can. It is Sunday, so this is my speech that I gave at Baylor University. I think you'll really enjoy it. It's Christ-centered and focused on a transcendent order and the need for one in our country. I also take questions from the audience, which is always a lot of fun. Texas episode to your friends. This was part of our Turning Point USA Exposing Critical Racism tour stop. This week, we are finishing out our tour on the East Coast at Alabama, Roll Tide, and Clemson University. And then we go to University of Arizona. Also in between all this, I go to First Baptist Dallas Church. I think that is next Sunday. We're all over the place. So thank you guys for making it possible. CharlieKirk.com/support. It's Sunday. Enjoy this episode. Buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
It's great to be here at Baylor University. I've actually spent a fair amount of time here in Waco. I almost went to Baylor. And so I didn't, but I didn't go anywhere. But it was the closest of any school. It was the closest of any school I actually went to. I went to freshman orientation, and it was a long story. I just was kind of presented with how much money I had to borrow to go to Baylor. And unlike you, I was not willing to do that. And so I didn't. And so here we are. And long story short, I'm back in Waco. So I have all these memories of actually being here trying to plan my life. I was like, I have to borrow $5,000 for this. And who are you? And why are you trying to charge me $700 to like have lunch? And so anyway, it's a great school. It is got some adjustments, I think, that we need to make. We'll talk about that tonight. But it is a school that I think has some great people, great alumni. And after a struggle, I want to thank Baylor University for approving our Turning Point USA chapter, and very good. And I also want to thank Ollie and the amazing staff, the amazing team here at Baylor. You worked very hard to pull off this event. Really is terrific. It's not easy to do this, especially off campus, and obviously we'd like to be on campus, but still a pretty amazing turnout, I have to say, and it's really important. So we're on tour right now. And when we were thinking about what kind of we wanted to do on our tour, you know, when we first started doing this, it was interesting. Kind of, we're always trying to be the most relevant and trying to communicate to you, our target audience, in a way that you appreciate and understand. And we never wanted our tour ever to be about a specific issue. But we felt, in particular, as kind of as things were developing in our country, especially after last summer, And with the implementation of this radical ideology, critical race theory, in a variety of different ways, we said, we're going to have to explain what this is and push back against this. And, you know, so we said, let's have this tour, exposing critical racism tour. Of course, no controversy at all across the country with that. We're going to Vermont next week. I think they're already burning buildings in anticipation of our arrival. We're not even allowed to say what our hotel we're speaking at yet next week because of out of safety concerns. But this is a really serious issue, and tonight's speech will be a little bit different because I'm going to come after this from why should Christians reject critical race theory. Now, maybe you're here tonight, you're not a Christian. I hope you become a Christian, and maybe I'm going to just go straight gospel on you and why I think you need to accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior. But this is the fifth largest Christian college in the country, and I think every one of these stuff, I'm not going to do the Christian thing. Actually, I probably should in Vermont. Definitely should. It's the second least churched state in the country. And then we're going to Oregon after that, which is the least churched state in the country. But I do think that tonight, as you know, Baylor being the fifth largest religious institution in the country, most people here tonight, I would guess, are Christians or at least aware of what Christianity says and what the Bible what the Bible articulates and what we as Christians believe. What does, if any, does the, kind of this critical race theory idea kind of have in common or at odds with the teachings of the Bible? So I'm going to kind of make this a unique flavor tonight. And if it doesn't resonate with you, we'll have questions and answers. We can go in that direction. So first, I just kind of want to frame this by saying, what is a Christian? I'm not going to get into denominations. I'm not going to get into Christian versus Catholic of all of that. You guys can sort it out yourself. The Nicene Creed, Triune God, Inerrancy of Scripture, you know, death, life, ministry, death, burial, resurrection of Christ. Pretty simple stuff. Right? You believe that you're broken by nature, original sin. You need Jesus Christ in your life to be born new, to get into life eternal. These are general Christian principles. Again, if you guys want to have a theological discussion, I'm more than happy to do that. I really don't have that strong opinions except the inerrancy of Scripture, Triune God, and Nicene Creed. And you guys, maybe there's some theology majors here and you guys would get a fun kick out of that. So the question is, if you believe in those things, what should you think about this growing trend of CRT and the hyper-racialization of American politics? So let's take a step back, right? Let's take a step back. Why is it that we even care about this? Well, last year, after the incident with George Floyd and the $2 billion of damages that ensued after that in the summer, last summer, all of a sudden we decided to completely and totally redesign American society. We decided to prioritize people based on race, not on character. We decided to change the way that we actually implement graduation ceremonies, where we'll get into some of these examples. But did you know 75 colleges across the country now do graduation ceremonies based on race? So black-only graduation ceremony, Hispanic-only graduation ceremony, white-only graduation ceremony. We are resegregating American society. In Georgia public schools, they have black kids go to one classroom, white kids go to another classroom. Though this idea of that we should care about the skin color and, you know, the content of people's skin color, not of their character, is not a new phenomenon, but it's new for my lifetime. That's for sure. You know, I'm 27, about to be 28 tomorrow, and I'm holding on as long as I can. And I feel like I'm like 55 when I say this. The country I grew up in, but it's true, never would have put up with this. Never would have put up with this idea of organizing people based on things they can't change rather than on things they can change. And there's obvious exceptions to this, but the general rule is that we should always try to prioritize public policy and laws based on things you can change. Human action. How hard do you work? What is your character? Are you trying to improve your life? Things you can't change, not a good idea to, you know, organize society around that. And a great example is if you cannot change your race or your ethnicity, then why would you possibly make that a priority or a preference in trying to say in racial hiring practices or in admission standards or graduation ceremony quotas? And this is for our generation, me not being that much older than you, a phenomenon that is growing, and we have to talk about where it comes from and how evil it actually is. This is everywhere. This is from the hiring practices of United Airlines to Pfizer to the United States military now has this sort, these sort of doctrines and these ideas being taught. And I'm going to go as far to say that this is a virus. And unlike this virus, after you get exposed to it and you get it, you don't get natural immunity from critical race theory, where this is a virus that is now within the church, it's now within the body of Christ, and it's now within many Christian organizations. So what is it? Put simply, started in the 1960s out of the Frankfurt School in Germany. This is a very top-level view, by the way. And feel free to dive into this during question and answer. If you want to, that's fine. There's an incredible amount of literature I'm happy to go through. But I'm going to give you the absolute surface level, is that through the Frankfurt School in Germany, there was a group of legitimate Marxists that left Germany, came to America. They found a safe haven here. They believed in economic Marxism, so they believed, in their own personal opinion, the abolition of private property, the rights of the workers, all these sorts of things, an eventual ushering in of utopia, the destruction of the American family. And they realized that bringing Marxism and communism to America has proven to be rather difficult. And so a specific thinker, if you could call him that, but he was pretty smart, just wrong about everything, Herbert Marcuse came, and he had a disciple by the name of Angela Davis, who is a black woman communist who lives in California still. She's 77 years old. And they believe that race is the most important thing. They believe that all power dynamics are not economic. It's not about character. It's not about who you are. It's about the color of your skin. That everything around you is racist, and that we must do everything we possibly can to try to organize society, try to upheave the white supremacist, colonialist, imperialistic, misogynistic, bigoted culture, and try to usher in some sort of indigenous people, people of color type revolt. This is where you started to get terms like people of color, minority ethnic groups. Soon after, you got affirmative action, admission standards in college, all these sorts of things that came through kind of post that era. And then in the 1980s, 1990s, there was kind of a cooling off period where the predominant viewpoint, I was born in 1993, was that, hey, we're not going to care about skin color. We're going to care about the content of people's character. Martin Luther King said that famously in his address at the speech of the Washington Mall, and that was something that was repeated many, many times, which is, hey, it's not good. In fact, it's racist to care about people's skin color, to organize them based on ethnocentric tribes. Instead, we are all made in the image of God. We are complex human beings, and your skin color is the most immaterial part of you. In fact, that is a sloppy, lazy, and dare I say, divisive way to actually try and say this is the most important, you know, way to even think about your fellow human beings. And then all of a sudden we started to see in 2010, 2011, a couple different economic and social movements set in where first, I don't know if any of you guys remember this, Occupy Wall Street, maybe you do, maybe you don't, which honestly had some really good critiques, and happy to talk about this too later, which is that there was a group of unelected Wall Street bankers working with Washington, D.C., of people that are basically exempt from the same sort of kind of repercussions, that if you guys did this, you would go to jail. The Washington and Wall Street bankers, they do this, they get bonuses, and they get treated really well. Now, some of it had kind of this anti-capitalist, anti-market language, you know, laced into it, but they weren't wrong by saying that there was this cronyist economic kind of cartel running our country. Occupy Wall Street fizzled out. It wasn't popular. It didn't get people animated. There were a couple protests here and there. This was after the 2008 financial crisis. The next big attempt that they tried to implement was through the whole Me Too thing, 2014, 2015, 16, culminating with the, you know, the Senate confirmation of the most boring human being in the history of the planet, Brett Kavanaugh, where they tried to call him a serial gang rapist because someone from high school comes out and says, yeah, actually, he came and, you know, raped me and forgot all these different details, all this. All the people said, hold on a second. Like, maybe this believe all women thing, we have a little bit of nuance here, cross-examination of witnesses, due process, look at the facts associated, and kind of a stunning turn of events. Even suburban women have sons, too. And they're like, I don't want that to happen to my son as well. And all of a sudden, that movement kind of fizzled out. And so the racial element has been here for quite a while. In 2015, Black Lives Matter, otherwise known as BLM Incorporated, started in University of Missouri, Ferguson, Missouri, with the big lie, one of the big lies, hands up, don't shoot, was never said by Michael Brown, complete and total lie. It spread all across the country. And what happened after that was the Ferguson effect, which police officers were then kind of made the enemy. They left Ferguson, Missouri, and they left, meaning they didn't police the same way they did. Crime goes up dramatically. We're seeing that happen right now, by the way. I'll get into that in just a second. Then you had some incidents in Baltimore that were highly politicized, which resulted in arson, widespread destruction as well. And so there was kind of these rumblings about this. And then, you know, for better or for worse, you could call the perfect storm imperfect storm, or you could call it an arsonist storm. In May of last year, what ended up being a much more complex situation that was ever presented in a video that made people very, very emotional, the death of George Floyd literally set the country on fire. And immediately, it was kind of confirmation bias of the narrative that we were always told, which is that law enforcement police officers are going and they're walking the streets trying to find black people. They're literally killing them without any sort of due process whatsoever. The numbers don't bear this out at all. And happy to get into that. 30 unarmed black people were killed by police officers in 2018, 2019 combined. Out of that, some of them tried to run over police officers, their car, grabbing weapons of the police officers. And out of 335 million police interactions, you have 30 unarmed black people in just 2 years. All of a sudden, you're like, is that really worth, you know, redesigning American society around that? That would be foolish and imprudent. We decided to do it anyway. $2 billion of damages. And all of a sudden, every major corporation stemming from what's happening in college campuses, we decided to all of a sudden embrace this, that we're systemically racist. We're a white supremacist country. And if you dare disagree with us, we will character assassinate you, mock you, ridicule you because you're a racist. Sit down and shut up. And all of a sudden, people started to read the literature. Moms and dads would say, wait a second. You're trying to tell my 8-year-old that he's a racist just because of the color of your skin? Like, not so fast. Started to show up in school board meetings, Loudoun County, Virginia, big center of that. And so now where we are today, in October 2021, actually critical race theory has a negative view by a majority of Americans. Not overwhelming, about 56% of Americans say, wait a second, this is a little bit too radical for me. You know, I can understand that if you want to have a conversation about some of these things, but all of a sudden saying that we need to have white privilege walks, we need to have segregated graduation ceremonies, we need to have segregation today to make up for segregation yesterday by Ibram X. Kendi, that's too much for me. So that was just kind of a framing. You could disagree with some of my opinions. Nothing there was an opinion, by the way. It's just a historical kind of catalog of where we are today. You might think all of that was a wonderful thing or an awful thing, like I generally believe, but that was all just history. And so then all of a sudden the church started to embrace it. And that's where things start, and that's really where I want to focus in, which is the church started to embrace this and say, hey, a certain theological belief heavily in deconstructionism and social relativism says that it's now the role of the church to try to right the wrongs of racism's past. And you saw many, many pastors, including one from Dallas, who I will not name, saying that, you know, you're white privileged, that it's the biggest threat to American society, that we're white supremacists to the core. Of course, there's no data to show any of this. There's no empirical logic of this. Instead, it's very pathological in nature. And so it goes to these fundamental questions. But first and foremost, what is the reason for our existence? The reason for our existence as Christians is to first and foremost give our lives to Christ, be obedient to the scriptures, obedient to God, and win other souls for Christ. That's the reason for our existence. It's not to lead social revolutionary movements. It's not to try and, you know, right the wrongs of intergenerational justice, which I'll get to in a second. And we have a very clear answer as Christians what the reason to our existence is. And maybe you guys could say it much more beautifully than I could. CRT has a reason for their existence too. The CRT belief, or the critical race theory belief, and by the way, that's a filler term. You could use wokeism, diversity industrial complex, wokistan, whatever you want, right? Whatever sort of filler that you want, it all works, okay? If it's insane, doesn't make sense, and they're really angry, that's wokeism, okay? So, and it's basically, there is a reason for that existence. And they say, our reason is that we believe that ultimate truth is not that Jesus Christ sets you free of your sins. The ultimate truth is a power dynamic. That everything can be boiled to is who's in charge, oppressor versus oppressed. That someone's in charge, someone is not. Therefore, we must upheave whatever system that actually is. And then I ask the question, which is the most important question right now in America. And that's saying something because there's a lot of different questions, which is what is justice? Right? And so we believe in a biblical view, or we should believe in a biblical view of justice, where it says very clearly in Deuteronomy that fathers shall not be put to death for their children. Children shall not be put to death for their fathers, but instead each one shall be put to death for their own sin. Now that might be a little graphic for you. What do you mean put to death? Read the Old Testament is all I have to say. And so, but what it's saying is that you will not be blamed for the sins of your fathers. You will not be blamed for the sins of your sons. You're an independent person. Justice is to you. You're your own being with your own sovereignty, your own ability to think, to be able to create, and you should be treated as such. And we know this in the Christian context too, not just in the Old Testament context, or I should say in the Levitical law context, which is that someone cannot save you for you, that you have to have your own personal relationship with Christ, that your father cannot say, hey, I'm going to be an extra good Christian and save my son for them. You could lead your kids to that. You can lead your family members to that. But when it comes down to it, you have to give your life to Christ. You have to give your soul to Christ. It cannot be done intergenerationally. It's Deuteronomy 24:16, by the way, which is that verse. And we also see this in Samuel as well. And the question is, should we care about appearance? Should we care about what people look like? Or should we care about things that are deeper and more important? And it says in Samuel, do not look at his appearance or at the height of his stance, because I have rejected him. For God sees not as man sees, for man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. Whereas it says this again in the New Testament, where Paul says, not slave nor Greek nor Jew, we are all one in Christ Jesus. And at the root of CRT, without overthinking it, it's redux of tribalism. It's that simple. It's that we should care about what tribe you're part of because of what your skin color looks like. And now some of you are probably saying, Charlie, this is obvious. I agree with you. What's the significance of all this? I'm going to go through some of these examples again. I'm going to reiterate this. 75 schools right now across the country are doing graduation ceremonies based on race. United Airlines has just come out and they said that they want to have a preference to hire black pilots more than white pilots. Now, I'm all for every person trying to be a pilot. I could not care less about the color of the person's skin when I'm in a plane, and you shouldn't either. You want them to be competent. You want them to be able to land the plane. And that is a very important point, which is that when we start to organize society, or when we start to make decisions based on things that people cannot change, versus on things they can change, such as diversity or skin color, not competency and excellence, then all of a sudden you're going to start to see society suffer because of it. And a great example of this is what happened in Afghanistan, which I think we forgot about way too quickly. What happened in Afghanistan was a public and international humiliation, where we gave $85 billion to the Taliban, we gave up the Bagram Air Base, the sacrifices of so many military members went for naught. And let me be very clear, I was all for ending the war in Afghanistan. But if all of a sudden I said, hey, you know, you have a kidney that gets removed, you take out a pocket knife and you start to do it, like, that's not a good idea, okay? Go to a professional who knows what they're doing. There's a good way and a bad way to do something that needs to be done. And getting out of Afghanistan, where all of a sudden, hey, let's arm the enemy, give the embassy up, not patrol the airbase, Americans are stranded for months on end, give China the upper hand with the entire evacuation, give up the strategic airbase. And the reason, in the opinion of, I think, anyone that looks at it objectively, is that the head of the United States military, Mark Milley, along with Lloyd Austin and, you know, Joe Biden, if you consider him to be the head of anything, they were testifying in front of Congress back in June saying that the existential threat to America was white rage and that we're not going to apologize for implementing critical race theory, diversity, equity, inclusion, or this sort of new history into the military of all places. The military that, by definition, every person here should want the military to be a place where competency reigns. That if you don't land the plane, your national security is at risk. You're not able to eliminate the enemy, your national security is at risk. Should all of a sudden we be worrying about these arbitrary academic exercises of diversity, equity, inclusion, or saying, hey, we have the greatest fighting force in the history of the world, probably not worth messing that up for some sort of esoteric, abstract academic exercise. And I also want to reinforce this, that this is something that is growing in every single facet, including in private hiring practices, college admission standards as well. And so we as Christians, I think, have a moral obligation. We have a moral obligation not just to say we disagree with this, but to say that this is evil. To say that we are going to reject the retribalization of any sort of society or civilization. Good things don't happen after that. People stop thinking and they start retreating to their tribal group based on ethnicity and based on racial identity. And the ramifications of this are not just violence and all these things that, unfortunately, I think you're going to see, but it's going to make the American project, the American civilization, for our generation, I'm the same generation of many of you, all of a sudden a more dangerous and less pleasant place to live. Murders are up 30% year over year since we started to defund the police, say that we're systemically racist, and retreat from the inner cities. Austin is finally I see some UT Austin people here. They're finally getting their act together, which is not saying much for Austin. I mean, getting their act together. It's not exactly the crown jewel of American cities. But I think they finally say we don't want to get rid of the police. I think that's finally been said, right? Congratulations. Yeah. Big win. And I do want to say, unlike Austin, Waco police, they're doing this for free tonight. God bless them for that. Thank you, guys. It's great. Great. And so there's a couple other points of this that I do want to kind of pose, which is, why is it this becomes so popular? And this is the big elephant in the room, because all of you might agree, and you're here tonight, and thank you, by the way, for showing up, and maybe you disagree, and we'll have plenty of time to discuss that, which is, everyone's afraid of being called a racist, and for good reason. because no one wants to be called the worst thing you could be called in decent American society. And because of that, people stop in their tracks and they're willing to do things they otherwise would not do because they are willing, not willing, they do not want to get the scarlet letter of social isolation that will basically destroy their entire career. It is worse in American society to be accused of being a racist than being known as being an adulterer. Now, I'm not saying that's a good thing or a bad thing. I think that's actually rather troubling for a variety of different reasons. And we'll get into sexual anarchy in a second because we had a lot of fun saying that on social media the other day. People lost their minds. I don't know what, anyway, we're going to get into that. I promise we're going to get into that, which is always fun to do because it frustrates people when you double down. Good rule for life. Double down if you're right. It's a good rule for life. If you're right. If you're wrong, apologize. You make mistakes. But if you're right, what are you going to let other people determine, you know, your opinions? They somehow control you? It's the craziest thing. We'll get to that in a second, though, which is... So we have to ask ourselves the question, why do we allow an insult that you know is not true to determine or dictate your own behavior? And I never sugarcoat things. I respect all of you too much. You take time out of your busy schedules to be here tonight to do anything but tell you the truth. If you decide to speak out against this, you will have the opposite of the truth happen to you, which is you'll be called a bigot and a racist for opposing bigotry and racism. And people in this room will pay a price. There is no doubt. You might be fired from your jobs, kicked out of your fraternity. I don't know if that'll happen at Baylor. Maybe, maybe not. UT, absolutely. sorry, it's true. Do we have any A&M students here, by the way? Anyone? Couple. Thank you for beating Alabama. That was a contribution to America. There it is. Thank you. Saved Jimbo Fisher's job, too, let me tell you what. He was on the ropes to being like the king of College Station in 1 week, which is you will pay a price. I wish it wasn't the case. I wish I could tell you something different. We don't do hopium here at Turning Point USA. Hope and opium, mix it together, really bad for you, feels good. And afterwards, you're like, what did I just do? I'm not going to do the things like, hey, everything's going to be great. You stand for truth, most popular person, and win all these, you know, followers, Instagram, all this. No, if you speak out on this, your life's going to be difficult. It's that simple. But you have a moral obligation to do that as a Christian. It says in Romans to love what is good and hate what is evil. And all of a sudden, you're starting to see the resegregation of American society. You're starting to see people that are being judged based on things they cannot control. Say, no, I got a problem with that. I don't care what you're going to call me. The only way we break this is enough people starting to do that. And guess what? Being here tonight, it's a big deal. It shows that, hey, I'm willing to show up at an event. I'm willing to kind of tell my friends kind of something of what I believe. And regardless whatever accusation you can throw at me, so be it. And that's not an easy thing, but my challenge to many of you here tonight is to be the same person in public you are in private. Not easy, but you'll be free. That I believe many of the issues facing American society kind of stem back to this issue of people being deeply conflicted that they have to be somebody else the moment they leave their home, their dormitory, or their apartment. That as soon as they leave their home, their dormitory, their apartment, they have to put on a camouflage and pretend to be somebody they're not and hold beliefs they do not have. That is not free. You are not free in that case. And I will say, though, that no matter what the backlash you might receive, know this. There are more people that agree with you than you could ever possibly imagine. That it's going to take every person independently to stand up against this, regardless of what they're going to tell you. And I would just encourage, laugh it off, shrug it off, and then deflect it back at them. Like, hold on a second. You're calling me the racist for the one that says that segregation is bad, and you're the bigot. And they've never been called that before, actually, because it's true. It's very simple. That racism is saying that skin color matters. It's that simple. The position of this organization saying tonight is that skin color does not matter. Instead, the character, the soul, and the spirit of a human being matters. And that is what we should always give a preference on. Okay, let's see how we're doing on time. All right, I'm going to pivot a little bit here. It's a lot of fun. Tolerance. Do you guys have those signs up anywhere on campus? We need to tolerate things. No, not. Well, Baylor's thankfully not as fallen as other places. Should we tolerate evil? That's an interesting question, right? And some people say yes, some people say no. And it depends what your version, your kind of idea of tolerance is, right? And what does that actually mean? Aristotle, who is the man, hope you guys are studying Aristotle. Maybe, maybe not. Okay, no. Well, I guess a little bit. Yes, a couple people. Good. Praise God. Aristotle said that tolerance and apathy are defining characteristics of a dying society. Now, what did he mean by that? Did he mean that you should be intolerant? Because that's what they call us all the time now. What he meant is when all of a sudden people stop caring about bad things happening around them. That's what he meant, okay? That he was using them as synonyms, tolerance and apathy. And I think this happens far too often. And so since I haven't been controversial enough tonight, so I have to dive right into it. So last week I was doing my podcast and my radio show, and I said, you know, the left in this country wants people to live in a version of sexual anarchy. People are like, what is that? That sounds like a band. Like, it's actually a great band name, by the way. Hasn't been taken yet. If anyone has a band, it actually might be, it's like the Sex Pistols, it's like sexual anarchy. No, it's very simple, which is that it's this 1960s lie that's anti-biblical, anti-Christian, anti-natural law to do whatever feels good, to indulge in the flesh, to do whatever you want to do whenever you want to do it, however you want to do it. That doesn't make people free. You will live in a state of anarchy spiritually and personally if you do that. And it's become wildly unpopular to say this out loud, which is why are we having so many issues with students and young people when it comes to this sort of issue, is that I don't think we've been honest enough by saying people that liberty is not doing what you want to do whenever you want to do it. Liberty is doing what you ought to do. And from a Christian biblical perspective, it means standing up and having hopefully the clarity to say, you know what, you should reject hookup culture. That you should save yourself for one person, loyally marry them, and stay in a single relationship with them, and say that this is how the Bible wants us to live, and you will be more free because of that. Now, mind you, when I say that, I get the exact reaction that I always get, and even from Christian audiences, silence. Because either people are afraid or they disagree with that, where they're like, well, maybe, no, actually, I kind of like a licentiousness world. Look, I'm not here to moralize. We're all fallen. We're all sinners, okay? I'm not going to be like, you're damned and all that sort of stuff. I don't do that. I'm going to say, though, it's not good for society. It's not good for society, and it's not good for you. And God loves every single one of you enough to want to say, hey, get back into alignment with my commands. Get back into obedience for how he wants to live. I can tell you, as someone who got married back in May, that we need more young people to get married. That we need more young people to get married and have lots of children. And I could say that this lie, especially to young women out there, because now we're going to get a lot of very controversial, this idea of putting your career more important than finding someone to be a partner for the rest of your life, it's making people deeply unhappy in America. It really is. And for men, I have something for men as well. Men, you got to get your act together. And you see, the women always applaud, see? And men are like, what are you talking about? Be someone worth marrying, okay? What does that mean? Take responsibility. Maybe you are. Maybe you're all phenomenal. Great. Magnanimous, stoic, you know, weightlifting philosophers. Terrific, okay? Whatever. Where women want to be with someone who can exhibit the fruit of the spirit of self-control. That can go a couple months without having to take a drink. Not that I'm morally opposed to that, but that's a big deal. It's like, is that person going to be able to control themselves against the impulses and the urges of the flesh when it matters the most? Is that someone who's going to be courageous and clear about what it means to be a biblical and godly life? We have a big problem in our country, which is more and more young people are not getting married. It is the least married generation in American history. We are on the verge of a population collapse where young people are not having children like they used to. And I think it's making America deeply unhappy. I believe that the bioengineering that is trying to happen right now, go find your happiness in a career and freeze your eggs, garbage. Go find someone that loves the Lord, get married, and stay married to that person and have a lot of children. It's worked for a very long time. And, yeah, so I call this sexual anarchy. We're living through it. Do what you want to do whenever you want to do it, however you want to do it. And this is best exhibited by what we just saw in Loudoun County, Virginia, and I've been an outspoken critic of the transgender garbage happening in our country. God created man, God created woman, don't have to overthink this. And this is where tolerance goes wrong, right? So back in May, unfortunately in Loudoun County, and I'm sure people are going to say this is an isolated example. Well, fine, this is an example, so you can use it as it is. In Loudoun County, Virginia, they instituted that men can go into the women's restrooms. A man wore a skirt. You might have saw this story. It's incredibly graphic. I'll do my best not to get into the details of it. Man wearing a skirt goes into the restroom and unfortunately takes advantage of a young ninth grader. School covers it up, doesn't talk about it. Father tries to go to the school board meeting to talk about it, gets arrested, gets called a domestic terrorist by the National School Board Association. Biden's Department of Justice then goes after him, says that he's unruly and all these sorts of things for just showing up and complaining at a meeting. And what did the school board do? They move the man who thinks he's a woman, who's suffering from a very real mental condition called gender dysphoria, and these people deserve compassion and treatment and healing. You should not redesign society for people that unfortunately are suffering from this disease. It's a very real thing. I'm not saying that, you know, anything but what I just said. However, what they did is they were accommodating to an extent, tolerant, brought this person to another school, and it looks like he raped another girl. And in two schools, totally covered up. And this is all of a sudden the question of, are we going to have the courage to do what we know is right, despite what people are going to call us? You're transphobic. Okay, whatever. Here's what's right. Women go into the women's locker room. Men go in the men's locker room. You got a problem? We'll give you the help you need. It's that simple. We are not going to be part of the continuous and deliberate deconstruction of things that we know that work. We believe in the laws of nature and nature's God, as Thomas Jefferson wrote in the Declaration of Independence. Now, many people are afraid to say this out loud because there's this false impression that we have to win friends over every single person. That's fine. I'm not here to offend people. If you're offended, that's your problem, not mine, because it's not my heart is not to try to offend you. But I will say this, that people are becoming less free the more that we degrade the moral guardrails of our society. That people are free when they actually abide to the law. There's this great quote. They're going to take it down soon as they discover it, because I mention it way too much, at the Harvard Law School. It's far too wise for Harvard, right? It's this great quote where it says, the law are the wise restraints that keep men free. That freedom, and the sooner students realize this, the better. And I pray that this is being taught to you. Hopefully, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. That freedom comes in the earthly sense, of course, from Jesus Christ and obeying to the scriptures, but that's the big one. Obeying what God wants for your life, right? Which is that you will be free, not from going to do whatever you want to do, things that make you feel good immediately, but instead obeying the commands as how God wants you to live. That will be a state of freedom, and I'll prove it to you. All of us know alcoholics in our life. It's a very serious thing. Those people are not free. They do whatever they want to do a lot of times whenever they want to do it, but unfortunately, that is not a state of freedom. That is a state of bondage to a certain substance that unfortunately then takes control of their mind and their body and hopefully not their spirit. And so, yeah, that's kind of what sexual anarchy is. And I wanted to make sure I mentioned it. I'm sure people are loving that on YouTube. Okay, in closing, let me say this before we do some questions, which is I want to say for those of you out there that are conservative, but you're not always paying attention to this stuff, but center right, I want to encourage you as Christians and as people that are on this campus to keep on learning. Dive deep into these ideas. Make yourself a lifelong adventurer of these ideas. There's a beautiful and wondrous world, an incredible body of philosophy and literature around these ideas that is exciting, that is compelling, and it goes deep into the things that you have been told your whole life that you thought just might dismiss, that all of a sudden that I think will complete a worldview that will not just make your life happier and more satisfactory, but will also make the world a better place. And this is what I'll close on. Our country's fallen apart. It is inarguable our country's fallen apart. We got shipping containers. Hey, at least Biden got a boat parade, okay? He's got shipping containers off the coast of California. Finally got a boat parade. It's terrific. Inflation is setting in. The border is wide open. My goodness. Where do I even start? We're borrowing like $5 trillion a year. We got all sorts of problems, right? The cost of heating your home in Chicago is going to nearly double over the winter. Southwest Airlines is a complete mess. It's like a third world country now trying to get on an airplane. I don't know if you noticed that recently. And yeah, we got serious problems. But I encourage all of you to take a step back and say, what kind of country do I want to live in? You know, what kind of America do I want to participate in? And that script has not yet been written. And that's the optimistic point for everyone here in this audience. It is on us, our generation. And I want to all of a sudden, I want to live through an American revival and resurgence. I want to make the naysayers wrong. I want to prove the ruling class to be mistaken by thinking that the cake is baked, that there will be an equal and opposite reaction of decent, patriotic American people and young people that say, you know what, I'm not going to put up with this. That I want to love my country again. I don't want to organize people based on the color of their skin. I don't want to segregate people. I want to live in a country that respects natural rights. I believe in the natural law and the natural law giver. And I believe church is essential. I want a country with borders. I want to, you know, people that go to D.C. that are not completely and totally corrupt, which would be great. And that's the type of country I want to live in. And guess what? We can still make that happen. And we have to reject cynicism. I have to do it every day. Okay? It's easy to be cynical. Things are terrible. There's an international globalist elite. There's nothing we can do. Stop it. We as Christians are commanded not to be cynical. We're commanded to be, we are commanded to not just be optimists because we know how the story ends, but we have to be salt and light here on this earth to a very dark world. And I can't stand when Christians say, you know, Charlie, it's just all kind of falling apart and the world is ending. And I say this, you know, Jesus is coming next Thursday, which might be true, by the way, you know, for people that have heavy emphasis on eschatology. If you think the world is falling apart, then your worldview is no different than Greta Thunberg. It's true. If you think the world is falling apart, then you're a Christian version of Greta Thunberg. What's the difference? The polar ice caps are melting. You know, leopards are going to fall from the sky. Like, you know what? No. We're going to be the ones that are solution-oriented, understand where we come from, and we're going to be one that that chart the path forward. And I'll say this. The conservative movement, those of you that are conservative out there that have lost, I just ask, how many of you have been graded differently because of your political affiliation or ideology? Raise your hands. I'm just curious. It's not as many hands as usual, but for Baylor, that's still far too many, I could tell you. Which is, you're going to become a stronger person because of that. Lean into it. You will become a stronger person the more you're persecuted because of your beliefs. And I'll end with this. Who's going to win the future? The side that is willing to get fired because they don't want to take a vaccine, or the side that gets so offended because they get called the wrong gender pronoun? Which side's going to win the future? I think we all know who. All right, let's do some questions, everybody, and thank you for sitting through that. All right, before we get started, the questions, can you raise your hand, please? Thank you. This is a overwhelming conservative audience, right? I'm sure we have some people that disagree, and we want to hear from them. No booing, laughing, or going after them. Let's give liberals the respect they never give us when they come to our events and give them an opportunity to talk. I mean that. It takes boldness to come to an event of places you don't agree with and ask questions. So please, you might be on edge. You might want to yell something out. Don't do that, okay? We want to have dialogue, even though free speech is under attack so much in our country. Okay, anyone, questions right here? You guys can start lining up, and let it be known disagreements are allowed to cut to the front of the line. So you guys can start to line up. And I will say this as people go, make sure you mark your calendars. America Fest, December 18, 19, 2021 in Phoenix, Arizona. It's going to be unbelievable. So check it out, December 18, 19, 2021. Also, for those of you that have not yet subscribed to our wonderful Charlie Kirk Show podcast, you can do that. Shameless plug, I'm only going to do it one more time. All right, first question, and again, if you disagree, go to the front of the line. I promise you we will give you respect and uninterrupted time if you disagree to be able to make a point. Okay, yes.
Hey, Charlie, thank you so much for being here. So I have a question just about the conservative movement as a whole. And having studied the conservative movement, I just see it as an anti-left movement. I'm just support being against whatever the left is against today and just moving further and further to the left. Like, how do we change that to where the conservative movement is actually preserving something,
yes,
rather than just being against whatever the left is and then eventually adopting whatever they think?
That's a profound point. You're exactly right. And I'm trying to fix that. Part of this tour is obviously playing defense because CRT's everywhere. But I'm going to tell you stuff that I think the conservative movement needs to be for. And I had this great disagreement with a friend of mine on our podcast where Dana Lash, she's a terrific person, but I said that the conservative movement should stand for paying people to have children if they stay in monogamous relationships. And she said, no way. Like, that's too much government intervention. I said, okay, hold on a second. If we're not here to preserve the family and have more children, then what are we preserving? Right? And that's just like one example, right? We need to fix the declining birth rate. People having large families is good for society. It's good for people. And what are the main reasons why people decide not to have kids in America? Number one is financial. And so we should do something to try to fix that, or at least try to intervene in a way that has an objective moral good. Having children is an objective moral good. And some people say, well, I don't want to have children when I get older. Well, then you're not going to get the money, okay? So maybe you should have children. And so I will also say some other things that we as conservatives should be for, is that we should be unafraid to try to encourage people to get in a relationship with their creator. Now, I obviously believe that Christianity is the only way, but I want to try to have people think more openly about, hey, like, we want to have church rates go up, not down. And some people say that, Charlie, the conservative movement needs to be libertarian on these issues. Who are we to say? Hold on a second. We are the ones to say that some things are better than others. We are the ones to say that drag queen story hour is an awful thing and should not be allowed. That children should not be preyed on by men in dresses to think as if that's some sort of biological norm. Now, that's creepy and weird and shouldn't be allowed. And it's bad for society. Now, this is a debate happening on the right. And if you would have asked me 4 or 5 years ago, I would have been more in the libertarian direction. And part of it's getting older. Part of it's getting married. Part of it is seeing the destruction of the world around you. And part of it is also understanding, diving deeper into the literature of objective truth and how, you know, the metaphysics of all this, of saying, hey, this society is falling apart. What keeps societies together? What is the only one of the Ten Commandments that has a promise in it? It's not do not murder. It's not do not steal. It is honor your mother and father so that you might live long in the land of which you are in. A relationship between a mother and a child or a father and a child is how a society continues to grow. That's a promise for the nation. And guess what? At every turn, you see them trying to destroy the relationship between a mother and a father. You have the leading candidate for the governorship in Virginia, Terry McAuliffe, say, who are parents to say that they think they know better than teachers? They say teachers know better than parents. This is now public policy that's being implemented. The country falls apart if that's the case. We say, no. We want to empower parents more. We want to make families stronger. We want to empower the role of the church in decent society. And so I completely agree, and I'm happy to go into more things that we should stand for. But here's what bothers me the most. I can't stand when I hear people in the conservative movement that do nothing but anti-socialism talk the entire time. Right? I can't stand socialism. It's evil. It kills people. Happy to talk about it. It's an awful ideology. But then they're like, well, then what? Corporate tax rates? Really? Like the companies that hate us? No. We want to preserve the good, the true, and the beautiful. That includes life in the womb. That includes church life, big families, and a moral center and a transcendent order. Those are things that the conservative movement should stand for. Thank you.
Hi, Charlie. I'm a big fan. I just want to say I'm also a conservative, but about 2 to 4 weeks ago on your podcast, you had said that there is a ploy to kind of undermine the white majority in America, which is something that I do completely agree with you with. However, something I think needs to be said is if there really is no kind of differences in races, then why is that even a concern to begin with?
Because that's a very good question. Mm-hmm. Doug, you can finish if you want.
And it's been working because, studies have shown that there are minority groups and they are more prone to vote Democrat than they are Republican. So I just wanted to kind of get a clarification on that and kind of further ask, is it necessary to preserve the white majority in America?
So I'll answer that second part. It shouldn't matter. Skin color should not matter. I'm going to use their own words against them, though. So the Castro brothers, not from Cuba, but from San Antonio, the twins, the whole segment I did, by the way, just so we're clear, was about what they said, which is that skin color, to my view, means nothing. It's immaterial. But they are saying that demographic replacement will be political power for them in the future. They're openly admitting it. They're saying that they are trying to have a nonstop flow of people coming into the country to try to displace a certain ethnic group. And I want to just reiterate this. The whole point of this tour is that skin color does not matter and the spirit and the soul of a human being matters. But when the Castro brothers go on Face the Nation in 2014-15, they say, hey, just a matter of time. Texas will be a Democrat majority because white people are decreasing and Hispanics are increasing. I say, wait a second. Who's the one that's talking about race? Who's the one that's trying to talk about a replacement theory? That's their own words. Joe Biden in 2017 came out and he said, it's just a matter of time before white people decrease and people of color increase. And so what I said is very, and I stand by it, that is part of their agenda and their goal. Part of their agenda and their goal is to try for whatever their main motivations is, which they say out loud, which is to try to demographically have confusion in the country. Let me say this, though. It's not working out the way they thought it would because, especially in the Rio Grande Valley here in Texas, you saw in the last election cycle, all of a sudden that went for Trump. Now, there's a lot of complexities to all this, but I will answer the final question directly. It should not matter. It should not matter that certain skin color votes a certain way. Unfortunately, the left knows this, that when you have millions of people coming from certain countries that are lower income, that go to certain areas, that are then preyed on by community organizing groups, they can turn those into automatic left-wing voting blocks. But yeah, I mean, I stand by my comments completely, but I just want to make sure that everyone is clear, especially for Media Matters watching this, which is kind of our publicist. They publicize everything I say that gets a little spicy, which is that they on the other side are openly admitting that, right? They're the ones that are calling for demographic replacement. We're the ones doing tours saying that skin color should not and does not matter. So thank you for your question. Appreciate you being here. Thank you. How you doing?
Good. Okay, so I have these friends in my classes, and we're good friends and all, but I have noticed that she wears, like, a Black Lives Matter t-shirt, and she's very for critical race theory, and she's African-American. And I just want to know, like, how you think, how can I, like, tell her and, like, make her kind of realize that these organizations and this kind of thinking is actually hurting her and not helping.
Is she here tonight?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, that would have helped. send her the tape. So let's start with things we know to be true. I'll go back to the first question. I'll go head to head with anyone on this, and I'll actually tell you some, I have the stats right here, which is you destroy the family, you destroy the nation. I believe you destroy the soul of an individual. Strong family, strong country. It's that simple. And BLM Incorporated had on their website that they exist to destroy and disrupt the Western prescribed nuclear family. Now, they actually removed it after about 6 months. So it's either they don't believe that anymore or they don't want you to see that. I think it's the latter, not the former. But if you look in 1950, 20% of all marriages ended in divorce. Today, it's approximately 40%, as high as 50% in certain parts of the country. 4 in 10 American children are born to unmarried mothers, up from about 5% in 1960. Here's my biggest problem with BLM Incorporated. Number one, which is if they all of a sudden said, hey, Black Fathers Matter, I'd be marching alongside them in the streets. Instead, it is an anti-American history, way we teach American history, and then anti-police movement in nature that does not get to the root causes, what I believe makes every society and every community improve regardless of skin color, which is fathers in the home and taking responsibility for their actions and their choices. Now, none of this might not be helpful in your conversation with your friend, but I would just ask a series of questions to your friend, which is, do you believe that putting fathers back in the home is a good goal? Should we try to do that? 77% of Black children in America in certain cities are born without a father. The national average is 70%. So without a stable father in the home, obviously they have a father or else they wouldn't have been created, right? But the point is that without a stable father in the home, and that's not sustainable. And so let me just kind of give you one fact that shows, that debunks the systemic racism argument, which is if you take a white child that is raised by a single mother or a Black child that is raised by a mother and a father, then the white child raised by just the single mother is less likely to succeed in every metric you can choose. High school graduation, not going to prison, getting a job, income levels. Where the Black child is more likely to succeed. It's parenting levels. And it really is that simple. But unfortunately, this is something that we do not have a hyper focus on. Instead, we'd much rather talk about police brutality or, you know, how we teach American history in our schools, or how about our schools in general. The second thing, number one, families, number two, is schools, where if there was ever an argument to say that there was systemic racism by intent, which I do not believe, but if there ever was a data point that I could work with, it's the quality of the government-run schools in our inner cities across the country run by public sector teacher unions. It is a moral disgrace that we allow the public sector teacher unions to do what they have done to our inner city schools. In Baltimore, they could not find a fifth grader out of 6 schools that could read at grade level or could do math equations at grade level. Not one Black child at grade level. So you combine that then with a broken home and schools that are not doing their job. And some people say, well, Charlie, these schools are massively underfunded. Now, if you compare them to suburban schools, they are slightly underfunded. But even when the funding gap is met, the biggest issue is quality of the teacher and the type of school that it is. A charter school or a Catholic school with less money will have much higher outputs than a public school with more money. It's the quality of the teacher and the culture of the school. So what does that mean? We got to break the back of the public sector unions in this country. We got to change the way that we educate our children. We have to hold our teachers accountable, pay good teachers more, fire bad teachers, and fire them quickly and have them go find another job, which does not exist in most states across the country. We should have at-will termination of teachers. And I'll finally say this, kind of like, how do you kind of relate with this? Don't stop talking. She might stop talking to you, but do not stop having dialogue and discussion. It's a moral imperative for us to keep talking, which is why we're here tonight. So thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Oh, sorry. Good morning, Charlie. Hope you're well. Anyway, so 2 quick questions. First one is, do you believe in the First Amendment and freedom of speech? just because it's critical to the next question.
Well, it's probably leading the questioner, but you bring it on. Yeah, I believe in the First Amendment.
Okay. Yeah, I just assume so. And the second question is, do you believe CRT should be banned in states because of that? And obviously, banning speech is a very risky thing to do.
I know exactly where your question's coming from. Do you think we should teach eugenics in schools?
No.
Okay, so that would be banning speech, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so bad ideas should be banned and not taught to kids.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Charlie. So I'm returning back to school in January, and I think I have the most useless degree, political science. And I'm trying to morally figure out, what do I want to do going back to school? Do I want to change my major, and what will actually benefit me? And that I've changed my major about 3 times now. So like, what kind of major, if you're going to school, would actually benefit in this world? Because college isn't...
Do you have your undergrad, or...?
Not yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
We've gotten to know each other, and you wrote me the nicest note when my wife and I got married, so thank you. You go to UT, right?
Yes. Yeah, okay. Well, I work there, yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, I'll challenge you. Just ask yourself, do I need to go to college?
And I don't want to personally, but my family really wants me to.
Are they paying for it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then that's important. That's a very important thing. Okay. Then the leverage is changed. See, the reason I was able to squeak out of not going to Baylor is I had to take out the debt. So I had a very good leverage, you know, as a good negotiating position. Like, yeah, this is not for me. I could ask you a variety of different questions on this. But if you have to go to school, I would try to find a degree or a major that you believe challenges you, and you believe will help develop your character, and that will study things that are ancient, that are eternal, and rooted in wisdom. You might not find that at a school in Austin, but I'm sure there's a school somewhere. And again, I'm not very pro Austin. If you haven't, maybe Baylor is that place.
And I do.
Maybe
I do school online.
Okay.
So.
Sorry.
I do school online, so...
Okay.
Yeah.
You and I should chat. I got some ideas. And I'm also a huge advocate. Not everyone can go there, of Hillsdale College. It's terrific. And everyone should take their online courses, charlieforhillsdale.com. It'll benefit your life. And those of you that are in, like, history course and you're looking for places where you could learn history if your teacher's not teaching history, charlieforhillsdale.com. Let's chat, though. I think I can help you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next question. And again, if you disagree, you can... kind of hop in line if you want.
Hey, Charlie. So I'm a grad student. I'm at the seminary at Baylor. And we just recently got finished studying critical theory to understand social theories. One of the arguments that my professor was making, and I totally disagree with him, is he said that if we don't care, you know, if we have this idea that, oh, your race doesn't matter, we're not fully, you know, loving God's creation. I know that to be a perversion of scripture, but I'm not sure how to combat him you know, when I'm trying to make the argument against that. What would you have for tips?
That's a really good question. And so I'll just kind of reiterate what do the scriptures say? I mean, in Samuel, and I said this earlier, is that God does not look at the outward appearance of the stature. He looks at that of the heart. And so God does not care about the skin color or melanin content in a person's skin. He cares about your soul. You're not going to be accepted into the kingdom of God, into eternal life, based on your skin color. It'll be whether or not you accepted Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior and the chairman of the board of your life. Now, let me say this. If you're ready for something controversial, let me ask you a question.
I love controversy.
Let me ask you a question. Does he tell you to be empathetic?
Yes.
Okay. That word is not biblical. It is nowhere in the Bible. And in fact, empathy is killing this country. Now, let me tell you why. Empathy means in the pathology in the Greek, M. In pathos, which we know, you know, ethos, pathos, logos, pathology, feelings. In the feelings of another. Nowhere is that word biblical. It started in the 1920s to try to say, I feel your pain movement, or walk in somebody else's shoes. Now, you should have sympathy, mercy, and compassion. But this idea that you should feel somebody else's feelings, what does it say in the Bible? It says that your feelings deceive you, is what it says in the Bible. Now, I think the overemphasis on empathy and the underemphasis on reason and objectivity has turned us into a soft feeling nation and not a wise thinking nation. And so we as Christians say, wait a second, hold on. Is empathy a biblical word? Is that something that we're actually called to do? And it's nowhere in the Bible. It's not. And now that's not to say you shouldn't care. Compassion is in the Bible. I mean, you shouldn't have sympathy, but empathy is the actual movement of walking a mile in the other person's shoes. And that is a total and complete humanistic and, I believe, non-biblical creation. So you should go tell him that and tell me how that works out.
All right. I'll let you know.
Thank you.
Hi, Charlie. My question for you kind of has to deal with, you said we should push back against, you know, critical race theory and those kind of ideas. My question is, after that, the next step should be regaining kind of the rational and healthy discourse. But yes. How do you propose that we do that? Or do you think it's like too late for our generation to regain that?
I hope not. And I mean, I'm trying and I fail. I'm not perfect at this. We're all sinners to embody that tonight. If you disagree, comes the line. I'll let you talk. You know, we'll have a back and forth. It's tempting to, you know, not want to do that because you lose patience. But I encourage all of you. And so this is a very important point, which is, what is a human being? And a human being is mind, body, soul, mind, body, spirit. We're made in the image of God, just as the biblical Trinity would be. But we are the speaking beings. We are the beings that are able to make sense of the natural world through speech. So there's two creation stories in the Bible. First, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And then John 1:1. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Now that word Word is logos, which means rational speech, reason, the ability to speak things into existence. Now we're made in the image of God, so that's who we are. When we stop talking to one another, we stop being fully human. When we stop talking to one another, we stop doing how God wants us to live as a complete and total full human being. Our capacity to have dialogue, so dialogue comes from a Greek word, dia, through, log, logos, through reason. We don't have that anymore. We have shouting matches, or we go back to what, tribes. You want tribalism to end in America, ethnocentrism to end? We need to talk more. We don't do that enough. I try to do that with some of my debates. They don't always go as well as we would plan. If you guys saw the recent one, it was a circus. But we had the discussion nevertheless. And I'm afraid we're losing that, right? We're trying our best. We obviously have very strong opinions here at Turning Point. But we always just want to say, look, when we stop talking, we start stereotyping, prejudicing, and categorizing. And that really bothers me. It does. We obviously believe we have the truth and we have the right answers about things, but we would never say that we don't want to try to speak to the other side and try to either see where they see it from or have them see it from our perspective. So how do you do it? Try to live that out the best you possibly can. But don't pander. It's a very important point. This is where it gets tough. So people would rather be silent than tell the truth because they're afraid of pandering. So what does that look like? Being like, oh, yeah, like, there might be a God, there might not be a God, like, who knows? It's better to be quiet than say that garbage. Let me be very clear. It's better to be silent than to pander. So be careful. Like, if you're not ready, it's better to not speak than to speak a lie or a half-truth to try to win approval over from the world. I hope that's helpful. Thank you.
Hey, Charlie. Back in July 4th, Christian Collins came and spoke at my church. He said that the worst thing the church did was they left government. How do we get the church back into government, and how do we retake our government in the swiftest path possible?
That was said very bluntly. I'm not going to say we should retake the government swiftly, but I think we should try to influence and be a counselor to the king. But I appreciate the zeal and, you know, the enthusiasm. Yes. So look, so this is an interesting question, right? Which is, should Christians care about your government? And some Christians say, no, I don't care about politics. I don't care about this. Well, it says in Jeremiah 29:7, the Lord is speaking, where it says, demand, which the Hebrew word for demand is badrash, the welfare, shalom, of the nation or the city I have sent you in, because your welfare is tied to your city or nation's welfare. It says in Deuteronomy that you should choose your kings and your leaders wisely. So we are called throughout the Old Testament and the New Testament to be counselors to the king. In addition to that, I will say that in some people that say, oh, we shouldn't be involved at all. Well, then they would have to take a scissor to their Bible and remove Esther, Mordecai, Nehemiah, Jeremiah, Joseph, and others in the New Testament that were counselors to the king of secular government for God's purpose. All throughout the Old Testament, people we view as heroes, people we view favorably, we're trying to influence secular government for God's purpose. Now, this can get confusing for a lot of Christians, which is I encourage, and we're trying to do this through Turning Point Faith, biblical citizenship classes in churches to teach Christians verse by verse, chapter by chapter, what does the Bible say about getting involved in these sorts of things? What does the Bible say about abortion? When does life begin? What does the Bible say about marriage? What does the Bible say about gender? What does the Bible say about private property? What does the Bible say about borders? What does the Bible say about immigration? Guess what? It says a lot about all those things. And saying like, hey, we don't get involved in that, well, you're going to have to make sense of all of a sudden as I knew you before you were in the womb. You're going to have to make sense of God created man and God created woman. Again, not exactly a difficult verse to, you know, understand. But there's more that are more difficult. There's ones where you're like, man, I see some contradicting ones when it comes to idea of welfare, government assistance. You know, there's verses that say a man shall not work, he shall not eat. Paul reiterated that in the New Testament, says in the Proverbs. It also says, hey, we're supposed to give our own belongings to someone if they need a tunic off my back. How do I reconcile that? Good question. Let's talk about it. And so I think that's the first step, is even just saying we should be involved in it. But that's the question. I believe the Bible says in Jeremiah and other places to care about what's happening around you, that we should not be the type of Christians that only care about budgets, baptisms, and buildings, and do not ever comment on things that are happening outside our walls. And guess what? It's hard. You will have disagreement. Good. Out of disagreement can come one of two things, clarity or retreat. Maybe those people shouldn't have been around in the first place. And some pastors aren't willing to do that. They want to keep their tithes up. They want to keep their offerings up. But here's what I do find, is that churches that are standing, that are speaking out, they're seeing their tithes, their offerings, and their Sunday attendance go through the roof because people are doing the following. They are leaving the churches where the pastors say, we don't do this. But guess what? Their 15-year-old daughter is being propagandized on TikTok saying that there is no gender, there is no truth, and they're going to their pastor saying, hey, what do I do about this? Oh, we don't do that in this church. And all they're like, okay, well, I'm going to go find another pastor that can lead me. Because people look to their pastors for leadership financially, maritally, you know, spiritually. And all of a sudden they're like, hey, can you help make sense of some of this stuff? Because I don't, it's okay not to know. I'm not the one that says, how dare you not know this? That's okay. I didn't know this stuff 4 or 5 years ago. And I was raised in a Bible-believing church where we believe in the inerrancy of Scripture and all this. But I went to a church where we said, we don't do politics. Right? Meanwhile, in that very community in the suburbs of Chicago, any Chicagoans here, by the way? Yeah, cool. Awesome. In the suburbs of Chicago, where all of a sudden they had the first ever transgender bathroom put into high school 5 minutes from that church, and the church was like, yeah, we're not going to comment on that. And that was wrong. And so how do we do it? We have to be leaders. We have to encourage our pastors. We're trying to do that at Turning Point USA and Turning Point Faith in a variety of ways. So thank you. Appreciate it.
Hi, Charlie.
How you doing?
I actually don't go to Baylor. I actually go to a school 3 hours from here called Stephen F. Austin State University.
Well, thank you for coming.
So I don't know if anyone knows where that is, but it's in a tiny little town of Nacogdoches. I am currently an interior design major with an art theory professor, or art color theory professor, who likes to talk about vaccines, and he never really actually stays on topic. And when I actually tried to speak up, I'm actually having a panic attack right now, just talking in front of people. But in my class,
you're doing great, by the way.
Thank you. I try to speak up. I'm like, I don't really know if I believe in the vaccine. I don't really know if I believe in the things that you're talking about. And he automatically shuts me down. And obviously, I don't want to pander, but I eventually just close in on myself. I'm like, okay, you're just going to believe what you're going to believe, and I can't really change you. So how do I continue to keep the conversation going? But if he just shuts me down, he goes, well, you don't really know what you're talking about.
So I'm going to help you out. Don't focus on him. Focus on winning other people in the class. If you debate your professor, it's largely a waste of time to win them over, okay? They're going to do argument from authority is number one. Anyone ever get an argument from authority? I'm the professor. You're not. Sit down. Shut up. I know more than you. It's their only tactic. They know how to end discussion, okay? And it's like logical fallacy 101. It's like, you know, actually, the theory of gravity, it doesn't exist because I'm a professor. You're not. Like, come on. Like, okay, well, that really doesn't make sense. So first of all, you're going to become a stronger person the more you speak out. Be prepared to be graded differently. As it comes to the vaccine, I've been very outspoken about this. No one should be forced to get a vaccine against their will. No one should be forced to get a vaccine against their will. And I don't know if Baylor's forcing vaccines or not, are they? I don't know. In some places, that's disappointing. Huh? The nursing program as well. Yeah, look, if you want to ask me a question about the vaccine, that's not really what you asked me. I'm happy to get into that. Big ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, azithromycin fan. And now there's like this war on aspirin. It's like really surprising. All right. Well, that's not really what you asked.
And I'll take a short detour. It won't be long, I promise y'all. I actually got COVID on my way back from Mexico.
So you're naturally vaccinated. Yeah.
Yes, I'm that. Yes. but ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, day and night, y'all.
Yeah.
Anyways, I also had quite a few English professors. I would say we had gun control, all that, those kind of things back in, I want to say 2014, 2015 when I was taking that English class. And of course, I mean, how do you combat English professors that are like, this isn't the, I'm not grading you on your opinions, but this, and this.
That's nonsense. They are grading you on their opinions. I mean, and this is a question. Let me just close with this. I want to get to as many questions as possible with this one question. Let me say this. Here's a question I get all the time, and I'm going to give you a truthful, provocative answer you guys can figure out what to do with it. I have a disagreement with my friend Ben Shapiro on this. So Ben says, hey, write what your professor wants to write. Say what your professor wants to say. Get the grade and move on. Right? I don't think grades really matter. I don't. I think character matters. And I think, and you might disagree, Charlie, I have to go to law school, business school, this. Great. Figure it out yourself. I'm not telling you what to do. I mean that. I would rather have a generation of courageous C students than weak and compliant A students that have done whatever they want to do. And now, I did not tell you what to do. You can make a rational argument. Charlie, I'm going to lie now, and I'll lie my way through business school, but I'll stop lying once I get hired by Goldman Sachs. Okay, if you got that all figured out, that you can lie now to stop lying later, you're a much stronger person than I am. At least how I'm wired, I have to tell the truth. It's like an impulse, and it doesn't always serve me well, but it actually does, because I don't end up caring what people say. But I just disagree with Ben on this, where he says, I went to Harvard, I told them what they wanted to hear, I got the grade, and now I'm able to use their credentials against them. Great. It worked out for him, and he obviously tells the truth, and he does all those sorts of things. My opinion, though, is that we need people to always stand for what is right. Joshua 1:9, be strong and courageous. I've not given you a spirit of fear, regardless of, you might get a B, you might get a C. I could tell you that you will be blessed beyond your wildest imaginations when you do what is hard and you pay a penalty for the truth. So pray on that and dwell on that. So thank you.
Hi, Charlie. I'm a high school student that's also taking...
Thanks for being here.
Yeah, I'm also taking college courses so that when I graduate from high school, I'll have my associates as well. But I don't want to pursue any more higher education after that. I'm not very interested in going in the field of trades. I'd much rather be doing something like what you're doing with Turning Point and being in either the ministry field or the political field. What's your advice for someone like me that wants to do something like that but doesn't want to pursue a higher education?
It's a great, great question. So find someone who's good at what you want to do and ask to work for them for free. It's that simple. People are like, how do I succeed? Go find people that are good at things and go ask to work for them for free. Fetch coffee, get something, and here's what's going to happen. Someone's going to get sick and go on vacation, and you'll get an opportunity that would have taken you 10 years to get. And this takes what? Grit and scrappiness, the two things they don't teach in college, which is you just show up on time. Here's the thing I tell people all the time. Do this for 1 year and you will be blessed in a career way. Show up before everyone else and leave after everyone else leaves. You will be blessed. It's that simple. Be the hardest working person in the room. Now, I can tell you this. We hire a bunch of people at Turning Point, right? I don't hold it against you. I don't hold it for you if you get a college degree. Like, whatever. Don't really care. I think that college, for most people, is a complete and total waste of time. For most people, not all people, right? I say this. What matters is your scrappiness, your grit. And so, people always say, well, Charlie, then can I have a job? Like, well played. So I'm going to preempt you on that because you always put me on the spot. So, but find people who do what you want to do and then here's what you'll find out. Either you want to do it or you don't want to do it. Right. And so I want to have our generation be scrappier in this way. Don't go, you're like, oh, I got to get this internship and all this. Yeah, maybe you do. Or just go find someone who's good at it. You'd be amazed. There's so many people out there that have made it that are waiting to be asked for help from young people. And they're like, yeah, I don't know where they are. Now, part of it is they should help, actually facilitate that. But I just want to encourage all of you guys. There's so many people out there that are waiting to be mentors. Go find them. Ask for help. When you are young, you will get platforms, you will get advantages, you will get invitations that you will not get when you're 28, 30, or 35. Your age is 18 through 22. There is this window where people will make allowances for you that you will not get the rest of your life. Take advantage of that. You're the college kid with no money that's willing to show up early. It will change your life. Work harder than everyone else. Hope that's helpful. Thank you.
Howdy, Kirk.
How we doing?
You're doing great. So, I really love the speech that you did. You brought up some good, interesting points, but I noticed a common theme between what I've talked about. I'm also a nutrition major, so I hear this too. Not only in my industry, the industry I'm going to work at, but also in your speech, the idea of a double standard. I notice it with the people you talk about. I notice it in my industry with all these gurus that really think they know everything when they took one nutrition class. So my question is to this. How do we go about combating this aspect of there's a double standard going on in our country? We need to do something about this. How do we go about best encroaching the idea that that exists?
Yeah, and that's if the left didn't have double standards, they wouldn't have any standards at all. So that's that's part of the entire problem that we have. I mean, I'll give you a great example of a double standard, okay? Which, again, I want to reiterate, I don't think I said this, but Turning Point USA, we're educational in nature, cultural in nature. I've done my best to not even mention political parties here tonight. We're here to talk about big ideas. But I will give you an example about this. And John Gruden should not have been fired as the head of the Las Vegas Raiders. Should not have been fired, okay? Now, you might disagree. Therefore, if you disagree with that, answer me why John Gruden's emails get more examination than Hunter Biden's emails. Explain to me why an NFL coach is investigated and called the worst things you could be called in American society, and Hunter Biden, who shares a bank account with the sitting president, is doing business with the Chinese. I was like, oh, can't talk about those emails. That's kind of the double standard you're talking about, isn't it?
Yes.
Just one of many examples I could possibly give. Sarah Silverman, Jimmy Kimmel all wore blackface 5 or 6 years ago, and they get elevated as leftist heroes. Yet John Gruden says private emails, not publicly, that people find to be out of color and that very well could have been jokes and out of context, never given the opportunity for forgiveness, explanation, or reconciliation. Instead, it is absolute cutthroat destruction of his entire career. And here's the thing about by the way, I'm actually not a John Gruden fan. I think he's kind of a jerk. I never liked him. Seriously, Monday Night Football, always kind of arrogant. Happy to get into that if you guys want. But I'll defend anyone when they're wronged with this stuff, because ask the black athletes that play for him what kind of person he is. Don't look at some sort of private email. Every person who's ever played for him says he's an all-star. He supports us. He's a great leader. You think they would have a better window into the character of him than some sort of out-of-context email from 10 years ago? So that one actually just kind of fires me up. How do we stop the double standard? We got to keep on talking about it, but we also have to know this. We will live in a society of double standards. We as conservatives will be held to a different book of rules. They burn down a Wendy's. They're called like racial, progressives. People walk into the Capitol and take a selfie. They're called insurrectionists, right? And so that double standard does exist. It's very real. And we have to live with it and try to push back where we can. So thank you. Appreciate it. We will take a couple more. We'll finish the lineup. So please come. We'll finish the lineup. Thank you.
Gotcha. Hello. Nice to meet you, by the way. I think you've made some solid points. And I have just kind of a little controversial question, but it's interesting. I want to hear what
you think. It's the place for it.
So I'm a Christian medical humanities student, and the reason I chose that was because I was taught that if I have the opportunity to help my fellow man, I should, you know, as a Christian should. So as a Christian, how can some conservative people justify not backing healthcare for people, especially like for veterans, because they do a lot for our country, and sadly they end up homeless and don't get the help they can get from the VA. So how can we justify not providing affordable health care for everybody?
It's a great question. Well, first, I don't know any conservative that doesn't want health care for veterans. So I'll just challenge you a little bit on that. But let's take the premise. Let's say that I don't want universal health care, right? We don't want universal health care because it'll actually hurt the very same people you care about. And so let's talk about the veteran example, right? So the VA is a disaster. It's a mess. The VA receives $100 billion a year. There's waiting lines. The quality of care is dreadful. And I will say we have universal health care for veterans, and it is a disaster. So the question is, how do we best help people, right? And so you or somebody, I don't even know if you believe what you said, you're just asking the question, so I don't want to put that on you. But that sort of opinion would say, hey, the best way to help people, government assistance, government health care. Now, I believe in a safety net, of course. I don't want the safety net to become a hammock. I don't want it to become a place of comfortability. But I believe the best way to help people when it comes to healthcare is, number one, where's my friend who's the nutritionist? First of all, there you go. We eat like garbage in this country, okay? We've got to fix the way we eat. We have a sick care system, not a health care system. That's number one. Number two, we are run by the tyranny of the hospitals, a private-public partnership of inside-out access, of hospitals that have perverse profit incentives and taking money from the taxpayers. But I will say this. You will not find conservatives not care. And this is an important thing. Just because we don't want something doesn't mean we don't care. It's a very important thing. And so I would just challenge on one thing, which is this, which is that you might think conservatives are wrong, or maybe people that say that what it is, but don't think they're bad, right? Don't think like, how could you not want to give health care? When in reality, it's like, hey, we want to have all people taken care of. The best way to take care of people might be through market competition, might be through choice, through improving the healthcare system, not through a massive bureaucratic, you know, kind of social engineering project. Do you have a quick follow-up question? Okay.
Yeah. So I do agree with you when you say that we shouldn't enable people, because I think that, you know, it is good to have a safety net, but we also need to grow and improve ourselves with our own will. But I have met people, and it might just be like people claiming to be conservative, but not really believing in the conservative, like help your neighbor values,
yeah,
that like truly don't want to give to healthcare, because like, if I have the money, or this is like their words, if I have the money, why am I going to give it to somebody else?
Well, yeah, I mean, you won't hear me say that, but I will say this. Let's differentiate one thing, which is government helping people and people helping people. The other thing, the other reason I'm against a massive government welfare project is I think it de-incentivizes you from helping another person that needs help. And we see this in Europe. Americans gave $600 billion away to charity last year. We have the highest rates of charitable giving in the planet, except one small island country, one in the Pacific. So we're like number two in the rates, not just the number. Europe, private charity is almost an unknown idea. When I was in Europe, I've been there many times, I explained what Turning Point USA was and kind of how we raise money. And I also explained how we have charitable hospitals, how people give money voluntarily, Red Cross, Salvation Army. And I remember a group of Germans looking at me, they say, what do you mean you give money to charity? You see, it's almost an unknown exercise. They're like, no, the government does that. It's the exercise of the state. I think that the larger we've made the government, the more we've given people an excuse not to step up and help people that truly need help. I think we need to empower more neighbors helping neighbors. Thank you so much for your question and for being here. Thank you. All right, we got four more questions. We're going to run the gauntlet.
Hi, thanks for coming tonight. So I was curious if you think that issues like CRT and open borders are enough to carry the Republicans in the 2022 midterms, or do you think that Republicans are going to finally have to get off their butts and actually start campaigning and trying to win on their own issues?
So I'll put my political hat on, because at Turning Point, again, we're strictly non-political, which is we have Turning Point Action and Turning Point USA. It's a you know, important distinction. So, yeah, do I think Republicans need to start to get their working boots on? Yeah, absolutely. I think Republicans need to start to lead. I think that Republicans need to start to say, hey, here's what we stand for, why we stand for it. We're not just going to win elections and let the country fall apart. And so, look, I think the biggest issues going into next midterms, inflation is going to be a real big problem. The economy is going to fall apart, unfortunately, and we're just beginning to feel the front ends of that. They want to spend another $4.7 trillion. But here's the biggest issue. Republicans will win back power if voters believe they're going to get action and not speeches. People want action. They don't want letters being written. They want things to start happening. And I'll give you an example here in Texas. I did a whole podcast on this. Governor Greg Abbott needs to send the Texas Rangers immediately to the southern border and start to secure the southern border himself. Now, that might be dramatic. People don't know what to do about that. It's one of the actions that needs to get done. I want to get to all the questions. So thank you so much for being here tonight. Thank you.
G'day, Charlie. Mate, I'm
good day, mate.
Around. G'day. I'm clearly not from around here, mate. So,
you're from a lockdown country.
Oh, I am. I'm from the most lockdown city in the world, actually. And so what I've found traveling across this country is that there's a lot of Americans who are seduced by the ideas that are perpetuated in Australia. A lot of, like, especially young Americans. For any of you who haven't seen like what's happening in my country, it's pretty insane. And I think that there's a massive equation between Western nations that we're all the same, especially with young people, and they look, or they're sold this concept that, you know, you look to Europe for the future, look to Australia for the future. So I just wanted to know, what would you say to young Americans about American exceptionalism and where you don't want to head in terms of the future for America?
It's a phenomenal question. Let me ask you a question first. Tell us how bad it actually is in Australia. Like, just tell us some examples of what's happening in your country.
So I'll try not to go on a lot because, I have a lot of mates who are really struggling right now. My mum's fled Victoria and my sister, they've left to go to Queensland. Victoria is basically where Melbourne is. It's the second largest city in Australia. And so it's basically the California of Australia. And only seriously worse because it's got really violent in terms of police cracking down on protests and stuff like that. We don't have any freedom of speech in Australia enshrined in legislation. So, yeah, so it's my mum's really struggled in terms of mentally and stuff like that because it's just,
And
lockdowns.
And just to add more color to that, mandatory curfews, can't go outside a couple miles outside of your home. Those are all real things, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
All because of...
Very real. It's not, yeah.
Because
what you're hearing out of Australia is very, very real.
I'm told by people this is not true and...
Oh, nah.
You got the accent to prove it.
People being arrested... People being arrested for putting their trash cans out after curfew. Like, you can get onto YouTube and you'll have a ball on there. You'll just spend hours watching crazy stuff from Australia. So,
America's,
not snakes.
America's supposed to be different. And this is where I talk about American exceptionalism. The Anglosphere has differences, unfortunately. That Australia does not believe in natural rights the way the American project did. You just gave a great example. They do not have freedom of speech protected. Therefore, in Australia, the guys with the guns get to determine who gets to talk. In America, as we have an assault on freedom of speech, public expression, freedom of assembly, all of a sudden, we're going to start heading in that direction. So what is the big difference between Australia and America? It comes down to our mission statement. It comes down to the mission statement of America is who's the sovereign? The people. Australia, they do not believe that. What else is the difference in America? We believe the states created the federal government. The federal government did not create the states. Australia is a centralized nation. We're one size fits all. We're going to tell you what to do. Mandatory edict. You do not question it. In America, we have liberty as a core value. We have a trinity in our country. In our country, there's a Christian trinity, Jesus the Son, God the Father, and the Holy Spirit. There's an American trinity. It's on every coin. You guys should look at it every time you look at a piece of currency before they all go away, which is going to happen very soon, unfortunately. Liberty, in God we trust, and e pluribus unum. It's the American trinity. Australia believes in none of those things. I'm not accusing Australia. This is not part of their mission statement. Liberty, which means doing what you ought to do absent government or corporate interference. In God we trust, a transcendent order of a natural rights giver. E pluribus unum, Latin phrase, it means out of many one. We are one people, and the ruling class is not better than the sovereign. And what is the ramifications of that? Australia, because they were not founded on the same ideas, you know, that kind of history class that you might not take that seriously, the history that's under attack by the critical race theorists, because Australia does not have the same documents, the same mission statement, the same preservation of rights. Yeah, when they get 200 COVID cases, they can march to the streets and start to arrest 8-year-olds because they're outside of curfew. And that's not an exaggeration. It's a real thing. So when I say an American exceptionalism, that means a recommitment to the American ideas that allow us even to be here tonight. If we had a gathering like this here in Australia, we would all be arrested for a very, very long time. Am I exaggerating with that? It's a very real
Absolutely.
Thing.
Absolutely. I was thinking that earlier. I was like, oh man, if this happened in Melbourne right now, it would be shut down. Hardcore.
We have something special here in this country, everybody. Let's make sure we don't lose it. God bless you. Thank you for being here. The last Hello. Two.
Hello, Mr. Kirk. So first of all, I'd like to say, for any of you who get the reference, let's go, Brandon.
Okay. Yes.
Now, as a lot of people have realized by now, in times shortly after a political defeat, there's an opportunity for reflection. And I think we saw that with the whole the whole breaking out of the Libertarian versus TradCon wing in 2019 after the House loss, and now with the whole issues of questions of family and stuff like you were talking about. And I think a perfect representation of that is the Arizona primary right now. Right now you have a Libertarian guy who's like the Tea Party, who's very popular, the current Attorney General.
Senate or governor?
Race. Senate.
Okay.
Masters versus Brnovich. And I don't want an endorsement or anything, but let's just say hypothetically the that Masters were to win that seat. What makes him special is his big thing is we need to make sure that a family can survive on one income, that That's we right. need to use government power to create policies that will make that possible for every American. And my question is, since we're on the state right now in the right where the establishment doesn't like using power, what can influencers, people like you and people like us do to ensure that when there's one person who comes up with policies like that, that they're able to affect all the other establishment, whatever you want to call them, people to actually affect those changes?
That's a thoughtful question. It is. Blake's a friend of mine. So's the Attorney General Brnovich. They've both been on my show. We're not going to endorse, and you definitely won't get an endorsement out of me here tonight. I will say this. What can we do? We have to demand more out of our elected officials. We have to say, here's what we want. Start doing it. And you made a really profound point, which is, why is it that conservatives are terrified of using political power and the other side is enthusiastic about using political power? Now, we don't like using political power. It is not our default choice. But when you start to have companies that are forcing vaccines against people's will, I'm pleased that Greg Abbott signed an executive order saying that no one will be forced to take a vaccine against their will. That's just one example, right? And so demand more. Make arguments. Start to say, hey, we want not excuses and we want action. And that, you know your stuff. Thanks for being here tonight. Appreciate it. All right, last question.
Hi, my name is Morgan. I'm studying to enter into the medical field right now. And my topic of question means a lot to me and my future, because in finding work and internships, I was wondering if you thought that that Biden's vaccine mandate would pass the constitutional review, and also why corporations are prematurely enforcing it before it's a law.
That is a great question, and I want to say that we get thousands of emails on our podcast, and you guys can always email us privately if you're going through these things. We'll help you the best we can, freedom@charliekirk.com, of nurses that are being fired. And they're like, hey, I've already had COVID. I don't want to take this vaccine. And it is marching forward at a tyrannical pace. It really is. So let's just kind of summarize. Biden has not issued anything of an order. Okay, he gave a press release. It's policy by press release. He has said one speech. He said he's going to do it. There's no executive order yet. It could be coming very soon. That's not the case for federal contractors, which could be some of the hospital systems, right? So he's able to mandate it within the federal government, so that could pertain to it. Do I think it's going to apply to constitutional review? No. But you're in Texas, and the governor just signed an executive order saying no one can force you to get a vaccine. I don't know if there was a carve-out for healthcare workers or not. There might have been, but it seemed pretty absolute in what I read. And you're going to have to make a decision, and there's no easy choice, because in the healthcare field, there is very little room for discussion about this particular topic. It is vaccine or get out of the industry, right? It's take it, discussion is over. I will say, though, that the remnant of nurses that have still not taken it, they're a rambunctious bunch. I'll tell you what, they are going to go down with the entire system. They will not allow themselves to be bullied or kind of put into this. I can't give you a definitive answer, but I could tell you this, that if you stand and decide not to take the vaccine, your life will not be over. That you will be blessed in some way because of that. Because you are not alone. They want to make you feel as if you're alone. There are young ladies and young men, but more women become nurses than men, here tonight that are going through the same thing. Please go meet each other and have you, like, go, you know, Morgan was your name? Go meet Morgan and say, hey, I'm going through the exact same thing. Baylor has a phenomenal kind of nursing trajectory program, as I'm sure you all guys know. And so there's probably a lot of, anyone here in nursing here as well here tonight? A couple people, you know, they're afraid to, I guess no one's here. You're the only one. I saw like two hands in the back. That's it. But I saw someone right up there, this is a big deal. But I mean, just kind of finish with this, which is, don't violate your deeply held beliefs. That will haunt you the rest of your life. Trust me when I say that. You are not alone. We have your back, Morgan. We have your back in more ways than one.
And to go to the previous question, we need to start getting our elected officials to say, no, we're not going to have our young people be forced to get vaccines against their will. Thank you for being here. We have your back. So in closing, everybody, I want to say thank you again to our Turning Point USA leaders. You guys did amazing. Ali and the whole group, you guys are phenomenal. Terrific event. I want to thank Baylor University for approving our Turning Point USA chapter. Maybe we'll be allowed to go on campus next time. Last shameless plug, if you guys are not yet subscribed to our Charlie Kirk Show podcast, you guys can do that on your phone, and it really does help us out. We're under threat of cancellation all the time. Final thing, it's going to be up to our generation on how this thing shakes out. Reject being a victim. Don't be cynical about our future, and take action to be and exist in the country that's going to be free and one we can be proud of. God bless you guys. Thank you so much for a great event. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. See you in Phoenix, tpusa.com/AMFEST. God bless you guys. Speak to you soon.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.